My name is Nick. I'm a longtime meditator, more than 20 years. And I just recently did a 2-week fire casino retreat on Denman Island, British Columbia. I would just like to say a little bit about my experience at the retreat and hopefully give some useful tips for anyone who's considering doing something like this. So probably the most useful piece of advice I got for the retreat was that regardless of what was presenting itself in the visual field, that just take that as the object and become as fascinated and exclusively focused as possible on that, regardless of what it was, whether it was colors, images appearing, whether it seemed like it was nothing at all. It really was kind of irrelevant what the content that was appearing was. The most important thing was to just really be as fully present as possible with whatever was unfolding. The other piece of advice that I found extremely helpful, this might be particularly pertinent to meditators who practice in a tradition in which a strong emphasis is placed on being extremely alert during meditation practice. So I had trained myself over the years to be extremely vigilant for any signs of dullness whatsoever during my meditation practice. And this included things like the beginnings of hypnagogic imagery. And so I became reasonably adept at catching those things as soon as they began to occur and doing what I needed to do to stop them from arising. And it turned out that that was actually counterproductive for this particular type of practice, for fire casino practice, because there is a stage of practice where you're essentially doing what seems like being fully awake while having a lucid dream. And for that to occur, you need to actually allow these hypnagogic images to arise. So it took me a few days of tinkering to get to a place where I could remain fully alert, but still allow these images to be there. That actually proved to be a pretty important turning point in the practice for me, the ability to do that. For practitioners in the Mind Illuminated tradition, so I have a fair amount of experience in this tradition. I've been practicing with it since before the Mind Illuminated was actually published, and I currently teach students in this tradition, and I'm skilled and experienced in all the 10 stages that are described in that book. And what I can say is that using the fire casino as an object, I was able to attain all 10 stages that are described in the Mind Illuminated. Now, I should preface this a little bit by saying that the 10 stages that appeared while doing fire casino practice, I would say, are analogous. They might not be exactly the same. I would need a little bit more time on the cushion with the fire casino to really tease out all the nuances. But for example, it was certainly possible, and I did this repeatedly, to achieve full physical pliancy using the fire casino and to allow that to then deepen and develop into states of tranquility and equanimity. And it was interesting to note that when physical pliancy was coming online and subsequent to that, as it went into tranquility and equanimity, the visual field for me basically became completely white. So that was kind of interesting. There were a few other things that I found quite helpful with the fire casino practice. Prior to this retreat, I did have some experience working the fire casino practice in addition to my regular TMI practice. And what I found was that there were some really useful benefits from doing the fire casino practice. One of which is that I think because the visual object is so incredibly sensitive to lapses in attention, it really helps you to fine-tune and hone, I found, the exclusive attention on the breath sensations at the nose. What the fire casino showed me was that there were these small gaps in the exclusivity of my attention that I had actually missed, thinking that it was pretty seamless. This is exclusive attention on the breath that I'm talking about. But then given that the visual object is rather unforgiving in that regard, then when I switched back to my usual Anapanasati practice, I could see all these gaps that previously I had been unaware of. So that was extremely useful. And in a similar way, it actually really helped me to clean up my jhana practice. The other thing, though, which I hadn't really expected, which was quite wonderful, was because there is this basic instruction in the Fire Casino practice to basically become as fascinated as you can with the visuals, it turned out for me that when I then returned to my usual practice of attending to breath sensations at the nose, I was much more fascinated by those sensations, even though I've been doing this practice for many years. And that made it significantly easier to stay with those sensations. So that was a nice added bonus. Something that also I think is valuable, it was for me at any rate, for people who've been doing, say, highly technical meditation systems for some time, there can be a tendency after a while for things to get a little bit dry or, frankly, for the fun to go out of the whole thing because you're being very precise, very meticulous, you're following the system. It's an excellent system and you love the results you get, but there's something about kind of grinding that out day after day, year after year, that takes a little bit of the fun out of the whole thing. And one of the interesting things that happened to me with the Fire Casino, both the little bit that I tried before the retreat, but certainly during and subsequent to the retreat, is that a lot of the fun kind of went back into my practice, all kinds of practice, actually. The walking meditation, breath practice, it reconnected me in an interesting way to what it was that got me into this whole business in the first place, what started me on the spiritual path. I can't really articulate exactly how it did that or how that all worked out, but there's definitely something's been rekindled for me, and that's been quite wonderful. For people who have a background in TMI, the mind illuminated, there's a few things that you will likely notice when you do the Fire Casino practice that will be of a lot of benefit, one of which is in TMI, you've been trained to be on the lookout for things like dullness, for distractions of various types. And there's a phase in Fire Casino practice called the murk, where there is not a lot going on in the visual field. And it can be easy for mind wandering to occur, for dullness to arise. And this is actually where I was, one of the places where I was extremely grateful for the training I had received in TMI, because that really wasn't an issue. The dullness, I could see it start to arise and it would just be corrected for. Distractions would start to arise and they'd be corrected for. And so I found it quite straightforward just to remain in the murk and have a nice wide panoramic perspective on it. And then different details and other aspects began to emerge, and then it became easy to pay attention to those. That's a way in which these two practices are very harmonious. Another area, and this is where I think Fire Casino can be of some benefit to TMI practitioners, is as a teacher of TMI, a very common question I get from students is, how do I know when my attention is exclusive enough? What does exclusive attention on the meditation object actually feel like? And it's a difficult question to answer because there are different degrees of exclusivity and there are different ways that can be experienced. But exclusivity is rather easily achieved, I found, with the visuals in the Fire Casino practice. And so I feel that it's actually a really nice way to give someone in a practice like TMI an early taste of, well, this is what exclusivity feels like. And now they have a target that they can aim towards, and they can then use their experience with the Fire Casino and exclusivity with that object as a criteria that they can apply to any other object then, including breath sensations at the nose. One of the interesting things that occurred for me during this retreat is I tend to be a little bit of a compulsive mapper. I tend to definitely be a little heavy on the analysis side of things. But I found that as I got into the retreat, I really lost all interest in doing that. So any sort of grand plans I had for, correlating visual elements to different stages of insight or even stages of the development of concentration or anything like that just fell to the side. And I just didn't have any desire to pursue that. A really incredible experience for me occurred, I think it was on day three of the retreat. One of the things that fascinating things about this practice is after the after image disappears, the red dot goes, the blue dot, green dot, whatever color it is, and the black dot, and then you're left in the murk, and it's essentially this, well, it looks like initially like a chaotic mass of pixels, for lack of a better way to describe it. And then you get to watch in real time as this thing becomes organized by the mind into shapes, into colors, into things that move, into things that are recognizable to you, into trees and rocks and rivers and oceans and fish and all kinds of stuff. And it really actually blew my mind just how, you know, I would do this. I would watch this happening during my meditation, and then I would open my eyes and go walking outside, and the same thing was happening all around me. And I had many of these sorts of insights into emptiness. You know, I can walk around, I can see how, yes, this is all fabricated, the mind is creating all these things, but there was something really powerful and different about watching this happen from the ground up in your meditation session, and then being able to take that outside with you and see the same thing going on. That was really quite extraordinary. I think I could have actually left after that and feel like I'd gotten more than my money's worth. And another thing that happened a little bit further along in the retreat was when I got to a place where I was experimenting with using intention to modify what was occurring in the visual field. So creating shapes, changing colors, changing the way things moved, the way things rotated, stopping things that were moving. And I found it was actually quite funny. I found here I was, and I was changing the way a certain object was rotating. And then I felt, oh, you know, I'm kind of tired of trying to manipulate all this. I'll just sit back and I'll just enjoy the show and just naturally observe what is arising instead of trying to manipulate anything. And all I could see were all these intentions arising from nowhere that were causing the visual field to do all the different things that the visual field was doing, even though I was, quote, not doing anything. And it really showed me that this is such a wonderfully interactive feedback loop that's going on all the time. And there's really no such thing as not intending at a really, really basic level. So that was quite wonderful to observe as well. So after about halfway into the retreat, I started to get what are called the third screen visuals. So these are images that arise that are basically photorealistic. They look like real things that you would see in everyday life. For me, these would usually last very briefly, most of them actually less than a second, some as long as 5 seconds. There were a few times, I'd say about 4 or 5 times, where one of these visuals would arise and there would be a fruition that would occur associated with the image. And every single time that happened, it was at the very end of the image, or perhaps you could say the fruition occurred and that ended the image. I'm not exactly sure. And just to be clear, when I say fruition, I mean fruition as described in Mastering the Core Teachings of the Buddha, just in case anyone's wondering about terminology. That was a different kind of experience. I had never had a fruition on visuals before. So I guess it makes sense to consider Fire Casino an insight practice, since obviously it leads to insight. About 20, 25 years ago, I was pretty seriously involved with shamanic journey work and was part of a shamanic healing circle for about a year, doing weekly healings on people with a group of others. It struck me pretty early on in the retreat that there were many parallels between that kind of practice and the Fire Casino practice. There was just the way in which the visuals on the second screen would flow, the use of intention, the occasional hyper-real imagery that would arise. The whole thing had a very shamanic feel to it, for lack of a better way of describing it. And so in a way, it felt really natural to me once I got into it. One of the interesting things with the visuals is I actually got lots of water visuals. This was a fire retreat, and here I am, and I'm seeing oceans and lakes and streams, and I'm underwater, and there's lots of fish. And so that was kind of interesting. One of my favorites was, if you've ever been snorkeling or scuba diving, and you know, you're maybe down about 15 or 20 feet, and you look up, and you see the sunlight streaming down to the water, and the fish swimming around. I love that imagery, and I got tons of that during the Fire Casino retreat. Got to the point where anytime I wanted it, I could just call it up and it would appear. And it was, all the colors were right. You know, it would start with white where the sun was streaming down, and then, you know, be lighter shades of blue around that. And then it would eventually fade into very deep, dark blue. And there'd be fish swimming around and bubbles. And it was really quite amazing, very relaxing. Some other interesting visuals is I got lots of eyes, just eyes everywhere. It got to the point actually when I would be walking around doing the walking meditation and I'd be seeing eyes in the trees and eyes on the ground. It maybe sounds creepy, but it never felt creepy. It was actually really fascinating to watch these eyes. And over the course of the retreat, without me trying to do this, the eyes acquired more and more detail. They acquired eyelids, they acquired eyelashes, they acquired irises and pupils, and then they acquired lots of intricate detail in the irises. They got specular highlights on the eyeballs, glistening from moisture, all kinds of things. It was remarkable. And it just kind of, and the eyes would move, and sometimes they would look at me, sometimes they would be looking, I don't know where, just different random directions. Sometimes all the eyeballs would be synchronized, sometimes they wouldn't be. It was really, really kind of bizarre and interesting experience. Even now, if I close my eyes, one of the first things I see is an eye looking at me. Another thing that occurred on the retreat, and this was a bit farther along, maybe starting halfway through, so about a week in and peaking about 10 days in, was the ability to create images. So it started out as very fuzzy. You could barely say that was a square kind of images, and eventually became pretty good. And I could create entire landscapes, forests, a stream flowing with rocks in it. And they all had the right shading, lighting, all that kind of stuff. It was all sort of built in, came with the package. It was like a super easy to use software program that just did everything right. It was quite fun. So I spent quite a bit of time doing that, not just because it was enjoyable, but because I found that by doing that, my concentration just deepened. It became more engaging, more fascinating. So the mind naturally paid closer attention to it, and continuity of attention increased. It was also really great practice for working with intention, because if I forced it too hard and kept after it too closely, then it would just mess everything up. So I had to learn just to have the intention and know that it would happen. And, oh, wow, look at that. It just happened. Initially, there was quite a delay of sometimes as long as 20 seconds before the thing to appear. But that shortened after a while, and then it became pretty much immediate. I also had fun playing around with it with eyes open. And I found that I could, for example, when looking at the blue sky, I could create shapes and other images actually in the sky, and then I could rotate them and flip them around and do all kinds of fun things with them. And then at any point during that process, if I closed my eyes, I would see exactly the same shapes in exactly the correct rotational positions and everything with the eyes closed that I had seen just previously with my eyes open. So that was quite fascinating. I had a little more trouble with color control. I never really got that anywhere near as good as the image control. I could sort of change the colors of things. It would take a while, and usually it wasn't exactly the shade that I was looking for. It would often be kind of a slightly murky or muddy mix of the color that was there with the one I wanted sort of mixed into it. I guess different people have different proclivities in this practice, so image control was definitely easier for me than color control. Something that I found extremely helpful during the retreat, and I started doing this, I think, already on the second or third day, was to sit out in the sun with my eyes closed and facing the sun, so I guess like as if I was sunbathing, and watch the visuals. And I found that when I started doing that, that was the first time that I started to see very fine, very intricate geometric patterns and very subtle gradations of color. And so I made a point of doing this every day during the retreat, and I found it helped immensely. Eventually, the extremely intricate geometrical shapes became three-dimensional. They would kind of roll into a ball, they would spin, they would do all sorts of really interesting things, which again made them easier to pay attention to, be fascinated with, and the concentration would just grow and become more exclusive. So I highly recommend, if you have the opportunity, to sit out in the sun and watch what happens with the visuals. And I found I would get a different effect if I did it without sunglasses on. I would be able to, once I kind of adjusted, see very, very fine detail in the visuals. And if I put sunglasses on and still had my eyes closed, of course, I wouldn't be able to see as much of the fine details, but the colors were richer. So that was an interesting trade-off. So some tips for getting into third screen I received from fellow meditators and found to be very, very helpful was to basically spend a bit of time initially during the meditation session to become very fascinated by the visuals, really build up the concentration well, but not too tightly, and then remove your attention from the visual field and just place it somewhere in the body and just rest it on bodily sensations and just relax. And what that tends to do is allow the hypnagogic imagery to arise. And if you can stay just very equanimous with the images as they're arising, they begin to flow and they'll be one after another and after another. And what seems to be happening is that the visuals in awareness provide like a little seed that the mind just free associates on, and it will grab a piece of the visuals in awareness and flash up an image that has something to do with that. And after this flow, there will be, or at least I found, there would then be the occasional super realistic, photorealistic image that would appear. So most of the images that I found during this state, I would call second screen images because they had the same color cast as the second screen. They had the same feel of the second screen. To be honest, it's hard for me to say whether they were pixelated or not just because they flashed on so briefly. But then when the photorealistic images would come, it was really obvious because they were so different. The colors were super vivid. The details were really sharp. It was pretty obvious when those third screen ones came. So that was a really great tip I received from a fellow meditator for how to get that process going of seeing the third screen visuals. And then after a while, I found I just developed an intuitive sense. I kind of knew somehow at what point in the meditation to start doing that. It just somehow naturally seemed like, oh, now's the time. And I would drop into the body and then the images would start arising. All in all, the retreat was fantastic. I really enjoyed myself. I had a lot of fun, and I actually found it extremely profound in ways that, to be honest, I'm going to need a little bit of time to process, because I made a point of not really analyzing anything while I was on the retreat. So my intention going into this retreat was to have a real opening of the heart. And it's fascinating because the discussions that we were having as a group, it came up a few times how this sort of practice seemed very, very heady, sort of very much in the head and not a lot in the body, I guess because you're paying attention to visuals all the time. But I actually found I had many, many purifications, as we call them in the TMI system, emotional, psychological healing moments, I guess, in a more generic sense. It was really quite fantastic. It's funny, I had this intention going to the retreat, and I actually had completely forgotten about it and just sort of went in and just wanted to see and explore and find out what this was all about. And then all these psychological things started coming up, and all this real felt like deep healing occurred for me while I was on retreat, which was amazing. So I guess the take home there would be have an intention going into something like this and see what happens.